It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona. We are going to be talking about, well, you know, something I'm hoping we can get segued into just another failed program of government in general. But, I mean, we want to make sure that we take and analyze it a little bit more. We have a gentleman named Douglas Valentine, DouglasValentine.com. He's author of the new book, The Strength of the Pack. Now, what this is about is we have, with the declaration of the war on drugs in 71, the Nixon administration set the stage for the massive projection of American drug enforcement overseas. Well, you know, it also had a lot to do with how our civil liberties are viewed and what, you know, the social and economic engineering of our own bodies here. But, you know, you have, you know, a handful of American drug enforcement agents and their operatives and the CIA and all kinds of things that are going on, you know, Iran-Contra, Afghanistan, Watergate, Vietnam, Bay of Pigs. I mean, it just keeps going on and on and on around the powers that were granted them with the drug war. Well, you know, they might be giving up on this drug war thing. It's not going too well for them, and they just got a new one to replace it with the War on Terrorism, Patriot Act, kind of whatever. Well, is that what's going to happen? Well, let's go ahead and let's talk to Douglas Valentine. Go to DouglasValentine.com, and you can order the book, The Strength of the Pack. Go ahead and tell us about your book and why you wrote it, Douglas.
Why I wrote the book?
Please.
And why?
Okay. You know, the way you just explained it, it's a big, complicated subject. And the book tries to wrestle with all those things that you talked about. But the thing that it probably focuses on more than anything is the relationship between the DEA and the CIA. And that's what interested me in this subject. I had written a book about the CIA's Phoenix program in Vietnam, and that was the CIA's assassination program, which, and Phoenix, by the way, is the model for the war on terror. And while I was writing that book, I learned that there was all sorts of drug dealing going on in Vietnam and the Golden Triangle, and that the CIA was involved in a lot of that drug trafficking out there in Southeast Asia. They, in Laos, one of the generals, this General Vang Pao, who worked for the CIA, was actually the head of the CIA's secret army in Laos, and they were protecting his drug trafficking operations. So while I was writing that book about Phoenix, I got real interested in the DEA and its relationship with the CIA and how we could be fighting this war on drugs on the one hand, fighting it tooth and nail, putting millions of people in jail, and how on the other hand, the CIA could be backing drug lords all around the world. So that's kind of like why I got into writing the book.
Douglas, I want to share this one story, and for the audience, you know, we're doing the best that we can. Douglas has a little problem hearing, so he has some people helping him, and we're putting the volume up, and we're making sure that we're getting, because I really wanted to talk to him about this, because this issue, can you hear me, Doug? I want to tell you a little story.
To hear him, he's going to tell you a story.
Okay. I mean, can you make out the words that I'm saying? Because I really want to get your input on this.
Can you make out the words? He's going to tell you a story.
All right, yeah, tell me a story. Go ahead.
All right, well, hopefully you can hear it. I'm hearing your translator. But this is what, there's a gentleman, the sheriff here, toughest sheriff in America, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, which a lot of people may not know. He was, you know, a big dog in the DEA in both Europe, around in Turkey, and the Golden Triangle up there, and in Central America. Now, I remember during the mid-90s, he and I were speakers at an event, and I got up and made my pitch for eliminating the drug war. And it was interesting that somebody in the audience brought up a book called The Great White Lie. And
Mike Levine.
Now, he was brought out, Arpaio went on national television going, oh, yeah, he's disgruntled, you know, employee and yada, 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 and, you know, and the DEA's good guys and the CIA would never and all that kind of stuff. 2 weeks later, we had another event where a lot of evidence was brought up. This is before the Internet. And where there are people in the audience got all the information of what this guy was talking about. And he made this comment. He goes, well, the DEA and the CIA had different agendas. And I'm going, nah, I don't think so. I think they were working together. They had the same agenda, and it was making money for the CIA using the drug war.
Well, as fate would have it, I interviewed Joe Arpaio a couple of times. And when I first interviewed him about 15 years ago, he had just arrived in Arizona as sheriff. And I had like three conversations with him. I'll tell you a little story. And the first time I called him, he said, yeah, hi, I'm Joe Arpaio, and I'm sheriff of the fifth largest county in the United States. And then the second time I called him, he said, yep. By the way, did I tell you that I'm the sheriff of the fourth largest county in the United States?
Well, no, it's the first now.
That county got bigger down there. But Joe's kind of fast and loose with the truth, as I think some of the facts are coming out nowadays about some of his finances down there in Arizona. Joe Arpaio started out as an agent in Chicago in the 1950s, and they called him Nickel Bag Joe. All the other agents did, because he would make cases on just on junkies who just had a nickel bag of heroin on them, and he made more cases than anybody else in Chicago. So he kept getting promoted, but all the other agents, they called him Nickel Bag Joe. And then in '63, he got sent to Turkey. And when Joe Arpaio worked in Turkey, he worked very closely with the CIA. So I know for a fact that in his own personal experience, Joe Arpaio, when he was in Turkey, worked with the CIA. The agents like Arpaio, when he was in Turkey in 1963, they worked for the CIA half the time they were there.
Okay, we're going to break, and we'll be gone for about 3 minutes. And when we come back, Douglas Valentine, douglasvalentine.com. The book is The Strength of the Pack. Now, we're going to muddle through this, because here's someone that has some institutional knowledge that we need to share with you and put in the archive, because we need to know this stuff. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
It's me, Ernest Hancock, my special guest, Douglas Valentine. Douglas Valentine, just how it sounds, .com. DouglasValentine.com, the author of The Strength of the Pack. Tell us, Douglas, why did you title it that, The Strength of the Pack? What does that mean?
I,
title that, The Strength of the Pack?
Well, I wrote two books about federal drug law enforcement. And the second book, The Strength of the Pack, starts in 1968. And it's about the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, which existed from 1968 to 1973. And, of course, the DEA, which came into existence in 1973. Before that, I wrote a book called The Strength of the Wolf, which was about the old Bureau of Narcotics. And the Bureau of Narcotics existed from 1930 to 1968. That old agency, the original drug agency in the United States, never had more than 350 agents at most. In 1968, when it was disbanded, it had 16 agents overseas. So in those days, an agent was like a wolf. There were individuals who were fighting the war on drugs. After 1968, the DEA started to expand, and it expanded incredibly so that they wanted to increase the agent force overseas. And drug law enforcement ceased being a matter of individual agents who were really, really interesting, fascinating people who had a lot of character, into being a bureaucracy that was fighting the war on drugs. It went from being a business of the wolf to being a business of the pack, where the individual agents stopped mattering, the fact that agents were human beings, they wanted to get rid of that that factor and just make it technical and ideological. So that's how the name of the book comes about.
Well, what is the ideology? What is it there? Is it they saying they're against drugs just because they want to say it, or are they really just trying to protect their own markets, their own territory, their own profits?
They're trying to protect their own profits. What's their ideology?
Well, it's a lot of things, but mostly it's making sure that the American in overseas, in terms of being an overseas agency, it represents. It's a projection of American force around the world. It has less to do with drug law enforcement than it does with just sort of waving the flag and letting people know that the United States is in their country and involved with their police forces. Anywhere, for example, nowadays there's 200 DEA agents in Afghanistan. You know, and everybody knows that the CIA is underwriting Karzai's brother in the drug traffic and a lot of the warlords over there, just like they did in Laos during the Vietnam War. But what's important for the United States government is just to project its power overseas and to have influence over drug law enforcement overseas so that it can be arranged in and organized in a way that's conducive to U.S. interests.
Which are what?
Which are what? What's the U.S. interest?
U.S. interests are making sure that some drug, in terms of drug law enforcement, it's making sure that some drug traffickers are targeted and that others are allowed to move freely around the world. In other respects, it's the same thing as having military bases around the world. There are some, I think it's close to 800 military bases around the world. You could say to yourself, why do we need 800 military bases around the world? Well, again, that's projecting American military force. It makes sure that we can protect our shipping lanes and our business interests overseas. The DEA nowadays is basically an adjunct of that function, that military function, of the CIA function of It's an organization that gathers intelligence overseas, the DEA, on not just criminals, but anybody who's involved in corruption or drug dealing. So there's all the DEA is just providing tons of intelligence back to Washington about the inner workings of foreign police forces, their security services, all these sorts of things that further American power abroad.
Well, tell me, I want to, hopefully we'll be able to get this in a short question, but what I want to know is, what is the future of the DEA? Are they going to be incorporated into Homeland Security? Are they going to be consolidate all this intelligence? Or are they going to create more alphabet soups? I mean, more agencies, more intrusiveness overseas and at home? Or do you think they're all going to consolidate under one big, giant, big brother?
Well, that's a good question, and I've often wondered about that, because when they created Department of Homeland Security, they combined Customs and Immigration and created ICE, but the DEA notably was left out of that. And I think that the reason that the DEA is not going to be consolidated is that it is basically serving as an adjunct of the CIA overseas, as an intelligence gathering organization that has access to police files all around the world. And I think that the DEA has a real, within terms of the government bureaucracy, a very unique identity, and it can serve in a, it needs to be independent from other agencies so that it can have the freedom to do the sorts of extracurricular things that they need it to do. For example, why do they need 200 DEA agents in Afghanistan? I mean, all they're doing over there is basically arresting little hash dealers and stuff. You know, they're not going after the warlords. So there's things that the DEA does that make it pretty valuable just as an agency itself.
Well, the CIA, let's talk about the CIA. What do you have any idea how much of their black budget is funded by the drug trade? I mean, is this like a major thing for them? Do they want to keep drugs illegal so that they can maintain their revenue stream to do bad things? I mean, what's the CIA's role in this?
Well, I don't think that the CIA, in the sense that you're talking about it, actually makes cash money off the drug business, although they certainly profit from the drug business in the sense that they can't get warlords to work for them against the interests of their own country, like a warlord in Afghanistan. In order to go against the national interest of his country, has to be allowed to make money.
When we come back, we'll get some more details from DouglasValentine.com, the author of The Strength of the Pack, the CIA, the DEA, and the War on Some Drugs. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence in just a few minutes.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Phoenix, Arizona, here from the beautiful studios of Freedoms, with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. We're on the line with Douglas Valentine. He was kind enough to go ahead and try and struggle through. He's a little hard of hearing, but we're working it out. And I wanted to make sure that we got this, because the book is very interesting. It's called The Strength of the Pack. Now, the one thing that, you know, Mr. Valentine also puts in the book is he traces the CIA all the way back before the DEA, and, you know, and they're working with the Federal Bureau of Narcotics narcotics agents back with the CIA and their MK Ultra programs when they were actually experimenting on civilians, unbeknownst to them, with all kinds of drugs that they were putting into people without their permission. And it wasn't, they probably didn't like that none too much. And then you have one of the gentlemen that comes out of that, a guy named George Belk, that comes out and later is one of the first guys in charge of the DEA, DEA's first chief of intelligence. And you just got to, from the very beginning, these are bad guys. Tell us about the bad guys and even before the DEA started and how you got the same people being in charge of the DEA. Would you, Douglas?
Sure, I'd be glad to. When the in World War II, when Roosevelt created the OSS, and this is how far back it goes, there were no spies in the, and the OSS was the agency that preceded the CIA, the Office of Strategic Services. They needed, and Roosevelt put a guy named William Donovan in charge of the OSS. Donovan needed people to train OS agents how to be spies. And the only people in the world who knew how to, in America, who knew how to be spies at that time were the drug agents, the narcotic agents who were working for Harry Anslinger at that time. And it was actually a bunch of these narcotic agents who worked undercover around the world, avoiding foreign police services in their role as undercover drug dealers, who trained the OSS agents how to be spies. So the history of the CIA and the DEA is like incestuous. They're connected to each other from the very, very beginnings. And one of these narcotic agents who helped train the OSS was this guy you mentioned, George White. And George White actually served in the OSS. And after World War II, the OSS went out of business and the CIA was created. But when the CIA decided it was going to start testing LSD and other drugs on unwitting American citizens, the CIA turned naturally to the Bureau of Narcotics. And when they needed somebody to actually test these drugs, and LSD wasn't the only one, when the CIA needed somebody to test them on people, they turned to George White. And George White in 1952 took a contract with the CIA. He left his he kept his job as a narcotic agent, but only superficially. And he opened up a bunch of safe houses around the country. And his narcotic agent informants would lure people into these safe houses, and and they would sit behind a mirror and film them and take notes about their reactions to the drugs. And they did this for the CIA. And that's a good example of the kind of the nature of the relationship between the CIA and the DEA. It really has nothing at all to do with law enforcement. It has to do with how to get around the law.
You know, one thing that's interesting to me is this Federal Bureau of Narcotics. It goes back into the 50s. Why? Why did they create? I mean, it's not until 71 until we have this declaration of the war on some drugs by Nixon administration. I mean, why were they going after drugs back then to the point that they're going international and being spies? What did they care? Was it that big a deal? Who was pushing this agenda of trying to rid the world of drugs?
Well, this was Nixon's great mistake. When Nixon got elected in when he campaigned for the presidency in 1968, drug use was rampant in the United States. There were hippies who were doing LSD and smoking pot, and uppers and downers had come around, and people were linking the civil rights movement to drugs, and they were linking the anti-war movement to drugs, and drugs were said to be the source of most of the crime in the United States. So Nixon ran on a campaign that of law and order, and he would stop the drug menace in the United States. And it's actually probably why Watergate occurred, because in order to win the war on drugs, Nixon had to stop drugs at their source. And within 2 years of being president, he realized that the CIA was responsible for a whole lot of drugs coming into the United States. And in order to make good on his campaign promise to win the war on drugs, he found himself at war with the CIA. And we all know how that battle ended up. Watergate sunk Nixon, and every other president that's come along since Nixon has very carefully tiptoed around the subject of drug law enforcement overseas and not encroached on the CIA the way Nixon did.
What about the issue of legalization? You know, where is the opposition to that?
Legalizing marijuana, of course.
All drugs.
There's differences in the qualities and the difference between heroin and OxyContin. OxyContin is a narcotic like heroin, but it's legal. And there's more people in the United States who are addicted to OxyContin than there are to heroin, and yet heroin's illegal. So why not just make heroin legal too and dispense it and treat it as a medical problem? People don't want to do that. The people that are in control of society, they want to keep certain drugs illegal because it enables the powers that be to beef up the police forces in the United States, including marijuana, which of course is not nearly as destructive as alcohol in terms of car accidents and things like that. But it's important for the powers that be in the United States to maintain a strong drug law enforcement presence domestically in terms of keeping control over people and limiting their civil rights. It's a completely phony issue because all of these drugs could be legalized and controlled, but it serves a very good political purpose. It allows politicians to get elected. They can say they're going to be tough on drugs, and people like that idea. And I think that, in just a few words, that's why it works. It works because it helps form the United States project its power overseas, and it helps domestically in terms of the powers that be having greater political and social control.
Here, one thing in your bio, a statement that you made: after 40 years, the war on drugs is about to become the longest continuous war in history. Between the outright mayhem and the wasted lives, it may also be one of the most deadly. That's a powerful statement. I mean, do you really think the war on drugs should just be ended?
Well, that's a kind of a value question, and I find, having talked with literally hundreds of DEA agents, that these guys approach the war on drugs as a job. They don't see it as they're ever going to win this war. I tried, when I talked to all these DEA agents, not to be judgmental about what they were doing and why, but they're never going to put themselves out of business either. I've talked to DEA agents who said to me that there's so much corruption involved with the
The music started. We'll go ahead and start that. They're not going to put themselves out of business because then they'd be out of a job. But when we come back, we'll hear more about the philosophy of the people on the front lines in this drug war. Are any of them starting to crack? Well, DouglasValentine.com is. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. A little bit of Doobie Brothers. Yeah, it's always got to have some Doobie Brothers. You're going to be talking about some drugs. Well, you know, that's what we're talking about today with Douglas Valentine. DouglasValentine.com, author of the book, The Strength of the Pack. And, you know, of course, I want to go ahead and finish up what we were talking about before. But first, I want to make sure that we also get into not only they're not going to be doing away with their job. I mean, you know, the DEA agents say they got a job. They're going to make sure they got a job. Well, how did this job came about? I mean, your book goes into the history of the federal drug law enforcement, you know, the formation of the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. We had the DEA comes around. And then you have, you know, how the CIA compromises the war and all the administrations and how they use this war on some drugs to create a ever-growing government to the point that we got to now, that now we have narco-terrorism. What the heck does that mean?
Let me think for a minute. As you know, there's a huge demand for drugs in the United States. So that demand never goes down. It gets larger and larger. And so, of course, as the there are always people overseas who are going to organize to deliver drugs to the United States. And as the DEA gets better and better and better at and better in its enforcement, the drug traffickers themselves become more heavily armed. And the profits increase to the point where in certain countries like Colombia, the drug traffickers are so rich and they are so well armed that their corruption spreads to the government itself. And they, like I was saying, the corruption is a huge problem. If in Mexico, for example, if a customs agent in Mexico signs on with the drug traffickers, he can make 10 times, 100 times as much as he makes from his job. So the pretty soon what you have are drug traffickers in certain countries as a political force, and they control drugs, they control businessmen, they have so much money that they're able to build neighborhoods, and soon they're able to direct where people's votes go in those countries. And that's when the CIA and the DEA get together and they say, well, these traffickers have become narco-terrorists. Because now they're actually threatening the stability of governments in foreign countries, and we have to go do something about it.
Well, all the more reason to decriminalize drugs.
I'm sorry.
All the more reason to decriminalize drugs, to make them illegal.
Yeah. You know, obviously, the demand is never going to go away. I think everybody agrees on that. All the don't say no, just say no, PR campaigns, they do nothing to reduce demand. So that's a fact of life. But the way the United States approaches the problem is as a law enforcement problem, not as a health issue. And so as long as the United States approaches the drug issue as a law enforcement issue, there's going to be narco-terrorism. There's going to be all sorts of social problems. And yet, as I was saying to you earlier, it's become a boondoggle. The DEA itself is a huge industry, and nobody in Congress or government has the nerve to try to put that industry out of business. And so as far as I can see, it's just going to go on and on and on and on like this.
Has there been anyone that in the DEA or CIA or high up in politics that has said to you personally that they would advocate the elimination of the drug war?
It's political suicide in America to advocate decriminalization. Everybody has to run on law and order. It's like being against the DEA is like being against the military. It's just ingrained into the fabric of our government, and that's just the way it is.
So do you think that this eventually, this growth of this police state of surveillance, of being able to check everybody's bank accounts, and it's starting to overlap into just this Homeland Security general Big Brother thing, do you think it's going to fall of its own weight, or are we forever enslaved?
I'm kind of cynical about it. Things are falling apart as it is. We've seen that. The banking system fell apart. And what happened? The government took $1 trillion and they gave it to the bankers. And now people are still unemployed and there's no help for the middle class. I think that the same phenomena will apply to the war on drugs. It doesn't matter what happens to average people. It doesn't matter that everybody you know, including most cops, are smoking some pot once in a while. What matters is that the system as it is has to stay in place. And when things start falling apart, the system doesn't react in a rational way. The system reacts in a way to perpetuate itself. So I don't see, from what everything that I see, it's just going to go on and on and maybe even get worse.
Do you have any opinion about the current administration and their views on it? They were saying at the beginning of their administration, promising they weren't going to go after the medical marijuana guys in California, and then they did, and then they didn't, and now we got an initiative. I mean, the Obama administration, are they hot, cold on this thing? Where are they at?
Well, it's interesting to see because the DEA has a stated policy of being against medical marijuana. And Obama said that his administration said that they were going, the White House said it was going to back medical marijuana clinics in California. And what did the DEA do? It defied Obama and it went out and it started busting these clinics anyway. So what you have is a White House that's transitory. Obama may bring some kind of liberal attitude towards legalization, but he'll only be around for 4 years, and if things get politically hot, he'll change his attitude. The DEA is an institution. It's going to be around forever. It doesn't exist on the four-year presidential cycle. It's just there, and it has its job. And it has a lot of support from the pharmaceutical industry, from the drug manufacturers, from law enforcement all around the country. And I think that it just has more power than any particular politician who might want to buck the trend.
Does the DEA, you want to know how intertwined all these agencies are? I mean, we have the military, we have wars, we have our intelligence community, the CIA, you have the DEA involved in banks and transactions and other countries and their policies. And I'm just wondering, is it all part of one thing, or is there something as the United States economy and the government starts to go down, is the DEA one of those agencies that might get cut off, or are they going to go down with the entire big ship?
I had a little hard time with that, but let me just hear that. But the DEA in the 1930s, when it was the Bureau of Narcotics, the 40s, the 50s, these were guys who had a 38 and the street and an informant and a junkie. or maybe some French Connection guy or whatever. And they went around and they used their street smarts and they made cases. Nowadays, the DEA is formed in, it's organized in military formations. They have helicopters. They have helicopter pilots. They have, they're sent to, Marine, to the Marine base for basic training. A lot of the recruits for the DEA are military officers. They're people who, the whole nature of the DEA has become militarized, and they're like a SWAT team. And the ideology that they have is one of being a paramilitary force that's responsible for the security of this country. They're out of touch.
Wow. You know, this has been a great interview. I'm really glad you struggled with the sound quality here, Douglas, and I'm glad we were able to pick your brain on this.
It was my pleasure.
And this was great. It's DouglasValentine.com. The name of the book is The Strength of the Pack. And in his opinion, you know, the DEA is going to be around a long time. It's ingrained with the CIA and the empire building industrial complex. We rule you socially and economically engineer the planet, people de la of whatever. And this is, and it's not until we reject all of this that we're going to find some civil liberties again. Thanks to DouglasValentine.com. We'll talk to you tomorrow on the radio here on Declare Your Independence.